Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Good morning. How are we doing out there today? Happy hump day. Already, I know. Love a short week. My name is Matt Rose. This is the big show in the morning. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Thanks for taking some time. And good morning to my good friend, my co-host, Nick Alberga. Good morning, man. How are you?
Matty, I'm fantastic. You know, it's always a good feeling when you wake up and you realize that it's Wednesday, as you mentioned, not Tuesday because of the holiday on Monday, right?
Yeah.
So we're like a couple days away from TGIF and mailing it in. So it's a fantastic day. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good, brother. I got out, played a little golf yesterday because it was a Stampeders off day. So on the stamps, don't do anything. I like to try and swing the sticks. So did that. It was a nice day. It wasn't too windy here. Was out to with a friend of the station, Riley Pollock, who you wouldn't know, but our listeners would. Our fast food guru, who's doing very well, for all those who would like to know. Make sure you're checking in with us on the text line, 960-960. We got a good show ahead. And the morning report. We got a jam-packed slate of guests. We got what you want to talk about and a bunch of dumb audio that I found yesterday that I'm very excited to play for Nick and get his thoughts on. That'll all be a little bit later on in the program. What'd you get up to yesterday, Nick?
So took care of business in game two of our three-game set in the first round of the playoffs in softball. So we move on to the second round, but unfortunately we lose in said round for it's been three straight seasons. So it's good. It's going to be an uphill battle, but yeah, we had a tough matchup last night. They threw a southpaw. I understand it's softball, but still, like, this guy had insane spin, and I'm a lefty, and I just still couldn't track him. I ended up going 2-for-4, but we ended up squeaking out a victory, shutting the door in the seventh inning, but it was a hard-fought series. What'd you get up to?
Just the golf, man. It was pretty much it. I watched the end of the Jays game. You know, it was nice for them to play the old four-hour tilt, so I was able to get home and watch the last, like, three-ish innings, watch the benches clear and all the jazz that went into that, so that was kind of fun. Then apart from that, it was a pretty chill day, just kind of hanging out, walking the dog, doing all the sorts of errands and all that type of stuff, and yeah, listen to the Daryl Sutter interview that he had with Eric Francis yesterday on the afternoon show, or on Eric Francis's show, which returned. It'll be on Mondays moving forward, but wanted to return this week, and with there being no shows on Monday, move the program to Tuesday. He went 2-3 yesterday, and did happen to have a chat with the head coach, Daryl Sutter, who for the offseason, usually, typically, remains kind of radio silent. You don't hear a lot of the head coach doing kind of the midsummer hits. He's a hard worker out at the ranch, appropriately so. And as a result, you just kind of have to wait. Who better to have a chat with him than Eric Francis? And listen, there's a lot the head coach touched on with Eric, of course. I guess the general one that people do want to hear about is just his thoughts on the moves, and we can dive into a little bit of all of that. But one thing that we constantly get asked about, and I'm interested in your take here, Nick, a kind of a view from a little ways away. Daryl talked about naming a captain. It's something we always get texts about. It's something that, I don't know, to me, it's one of those things that if you got a good leadership group, it doesn't really matter to me who the captain is. I will listen to arguments going the other way there, but that's kind of where I come down. As long as you just got a good handful of strong leaders, you don't necessarily have to have one C. But this is what Daryl Sutter had to say when he was asked about the possibility of naming a captain for the upcoming season.
Anybody that was probably a consideration for it, you know, they're the up-and-comers, but they're also guys that weren't on a contract. So really would make not much sense to be naming captains when they're only going to be here a year or two. So I think it's still a growth part of this team, and the team is not the pinnacle or where you want to get to is after you won a round, you want to see if you can win another round. So you still have to be able to put that all together and get all your all your guys aligned in terms of their roles and how they have to play for you. So I don't think the captain thing is something I thought a lot about. I think that I think I learned a lot about the players last year, and we'll just go from there.
So, open-ended, for sure, from the head coach right now. Now, there's obviously some differences. There is several players on this team who are now signed long-term, and you can look at and say they will be here for quite some time. But those are also the players that are coming into the locker room for the first time and are either going to be, you know, adapting to the culture, changing the culture a little bit, whatever kind of expectation you have for these guys coming into a brand new locker room, and several of them, and they being, established NHL players with some clout coming in. So I don't know. I wonder where you come down on the idea of kind of needing to name a captain, because the team's pretty good without one and just a handful of solid A's.
Yeah, first off, I mean, it's quite abundant and clear that we need to get Daryl Sutter a Rogers phone plan, right? Like, I think it's clear in that clip that there's no way in hell he uses Rogers. So I wanted to get that out of the way. Number two, reading in between the lines of what he just said, Matthew Tkachuk was going to be the next captain of the Calgary Flames, right? I think you can agree with that.
Yeah, I think he definitely would have been someone in consideration. I do wonder about Gaudreau, but I think
he said a player with 1 or 2 years remaining on his contract.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of why I was thinking Matthew Tkachuk or Johnny Gaudreau, because they both had the 1 years.
Either or, you're right. I don't know. I'm somewhere in the middle when it comes to captains, right? Because I think from team to team, it varies in importance. I think on a team like Calgary, who has some vets, who has a guy like Daryl Sutter, who's been there before, I'm right there with you. Like, if you have, a plethora of players who act as a leadership core, why do you need one, right? At that point, it's somebody to do ceremonial face-offs. It's somebody to talk to the refs for. Like, honestly, I'm not even kidding.
Yeah,
like,
100%.
I think there's a lot of candidates. Like, I think if you're to ask me right now, maybe it's Chris Tanev, right? The guy's beloved. Sure. We saw what the Calgary Flames were without Chris Tanev in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It wasn't pretty, but along those lines, I think there's a variety of different players who can wear the C proudly, whether it be a guy like Huberto coming in, or Tyler Toffoli, or Andrew Mangiapane, like, a Michael Backlund comes to mind. Like, there's a lot of guys who have been there, and some who haven't, who could take on that C, but I just don't put as much stock as a lot of people are. Like, I just think there's a need in this day and age from fan bases to have that C. When, Rosie, you look around the league, last I checked, there's 7 teams that don't have a captain. So I don't know what the rush is. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. There's certain teams that I look at and say, yeah, if you have Nathan MacKinnon on your team, or you have Connor McDavid on your team, yeah, okay, you got an easy choice right there. It's no problem. It's a done deal. But in a situation such as this with the Flames, like, you could look throughout the roster, and I thought that all the guys you named have good aspects that you look at and say, that's something that a captain would do. But then there's also certain things where you just like, I don't know. Like, the other thing that I would say for a captain, apart from, ceremonial puck drops and being that kind of that membrane between the head coach and the rest of the team, being that membrane between the referees and the bench when there's calls. The other thing is the media attention. Like, you're the guy who speaks to the media more often than not as the captain. That's what happened when Mark Giordano was here. It was a role that I thought Matthew Tkachuk kind of held last season as far as a guy who spoke to the media a lot, win or lose. And I don't necessarily see Chris Tanev as a guy who relishes the opportunity to come speak with us rubes a few times a week. So that's the one reason that I kind of wonder about Chris Tanev. But everything else that he does is exactly what you would want to see from a captain. The way he plays, the way he prepares, the way he battles, everything that he does, it exemplifies what you would kind of want to see in a player like that. Another guy that I would throw out there is Blake Coleman. Always love chatting with Coleman. He is a very cerebral player. He thinks the game very well. He plays hard. He's a guy who probably going to be in your top six, definitely in your middle six for the next handful of years. So I think that's a guy that I would kind of look at and say, you've been here for a year now. You get the family set up. This is a guy who's won cups, who you know, never took a shift off when the postseason arrived. He was someone that I really enjoyed watching. So that would be another guy that I ponder. But you always have to think about these new guys, right? Weegar,
yep.
You know, Kadri is a very interesting candidate, I think. And then Huberto as well. But I don't know. I don't know how much Huberto is much of a media guy. I just,
yeah.
That's a straight up just unsure, haven't followed kind of the Florida. Who's coming out and doing press in Florida today? I haven't been keeping my
three
tally.
People.
But yeah. Well, that's the reporters. That's different. But mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting conversation to have. I don't necessarily think that they're going to name one this year. I think it's going to be a wait and see type of thing.
No, I tend to agree. Like reading in between the lines again, it just led me to Matthew Tkachuk and it just Daryl Sutter, right? Like this is how he works. And I think patience is a virtue. And there shouldn't be a rush. Like last time I checked, does it really matter outside of everything we just mentioned? You know, things that a captain needs to do, you know, it has changed, right, over the years. And I just don't think there needs to be a rush on naming this new captain, considering, A, how long it's been since they've had, you know, the previous captain and Mark Giordano. And moving forward, I think to your point, it's a really good year to assess what you have, you know, especially in longer-term guys like Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberto. And again, it's still our expectation that Mackenzie Weegar, they're trying their hardest to make that contract and put it together before puck drop for the season. So, yeah, I wouldn't rush on it. I know people are you know, getting to that point where, you know, there's a need and you need something to talk about this time of year. We're getting closer to training camps and rookie camps, but I just wouldn't put a rush on this because I just don't know if it's as much of a need in this day and age as it was maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 15 years ago. Like it's a different story,
yeah.
But it's certainly a conversation to have, right?
Yeah, 100%. And we do have some text coming in, 960-960. I do encourage you to join the program as we're kind of tossing around a little bit of Daryl Sutter's interview from yesterday. And if you haven't heard the interview, you can find it on the Big Show podcast channel. That's where the Francis Show goes out. To your favorite podcatcher, wherever it may be. It's a solid 18 minutes with the head coach. This one says a couple of these. When was the last time a team without a captain won the cup, and how many past champions didn't have a captain? Well, I do want to say, weren't the Flames in 89 like three captains, which is basically you know what the Flames have right now, where if you don't have one captain, you've got four alternates. Don't you necessarily have like four mini captains? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I think you look at these cup winning teams too, and it's quite definitive and clear why they're winning Stanley Cups. Like these are first ballot future Hall of Famers hoisting Lord Stanley, with exception to Gabe Landeskog, of course, who's the captain of the Colorado Avalanche. But like you're looking at the Crosbys of the world and others, like it's pretty easy to decipher why those teams have won, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. Crosby, Stamkos in Tampa Bay, another guy that would be right of that ilk. And yes, I did make a mistake. Landeskog has been the captain in Colorado for
I always make
ever.
That mistake, man, because you think Nate MacKinnon, you think best player in the Avalanche,
yeah.
And he would be the captain if Landeskog wasn't there. But if you remember, Landeskog at the time was named the youngest captain in NHL history.
19? Or
yeah.
Something like that. And then McDavid came along and kind of changed that up. But at the time, that was one of those situations where they just didn't have anybody else and they felt like they wanted to. And I do think in situations where maybe you're a team that's trying to grow, maybe you want a nice veteran captain to kind of bring the young guys along. But when you're a team like this and you're a contender, it's one of those things where, you know, you're expected to come, bring your lunch pail, be ready to go. You shouldn't necessarily have to have a captain who's always on your ass, you know, kind of kicking you in the rear, pulling you along. Like if you're a contender, you don't have passengers like that that need to be coddled and dragged along.
And also, I mean, I think they have a legacy to carry here too, right? Who are the two previous captains of this storied franchise? Mark Giordano and Jerome McGinley. So what I'm telling you is you don't want to rush into a decision, right?
No, definitely not.
It's elite company, man.
The last two have, they held the title for quite some time. So, and that was something I went back to all the time last year as well, was a lot of guys were unsigned. And you weren't going to, like, I could have seen a situation where they packaged a new contract with a C or an A for one of those guys. But That was the one that I wasn't too sure about. And this one, what about Kadri? He's vocal and maturing as a player. Yes, he is. And and that's why I say he's an interesting wrinkle, just because it's going to be his first year around the team, right? And you wonder what's going to be almost the balance between the existing players and the newcomers, and who kind of steps up and forms that leadership group. But the one thing I can say is that the addition of Nazem Kadri makes this team extremely deep down the middle. And that's something that Daryl Sutter is really excited about too, especially when you look around the rest of the Pacific Division.
Well, he's a centerman. Bottom line is, not good enough at center ice. Showed up in the playoffs. This division is three, the top teams are three centermen deep, and it really exposed us, especially you know, with Sean being hurt and not being able to play. So I think that really exposed him. Hey, Kadri's, you can say he's a Daryl Sutter type player. He's a winner. You know what? He finished, what, 10th in scoring last year or whatever. He plays a lot of situations, and he plays, he's still got a little bit of old school in him. And when you're, one thing him and I have talked about, you know what? Once you've won it, you just want to win again. And you know, everybody wants to win it, but they don't always understand what it takes. But I think he's a guy that understands. And you know what? I think our team, Eric, at the end of the day, has been really looking for leadership and all that type of thing, not just last year, but the last few years. And I think that bringing in these guys this summer, that Brad did, will really help us in that area.
So even a little captaincy tidbit at the end there, but bringing in Kadri, like, I'm very excited. And the head coach did go on and he was kind of asked about some lines and stuff like that. And he was very much of the category of, listen, I got to get all these guys on one sheet of ice together and see what I see. And we'll go from there. And listen, the way that the lines worked last year in Daryl, I trust. That's something that I'm just going to sit back and I can give some thoughts. I can give some ideas. But they're going to be irrelevant when it all comes out in the wash. But this is something that I think for the Flames, I don't think there's any surprise there that the coach says, yes, this is a good thing for us. But I'm very intrigued to see what he can do, you know, being able to go three deep down the middle, have this blue line, have this set up between the pipes, because you lost two elite wingers, but I don't know how many people you're going to find, you know, around the NHL that say you win Stanley Cups with top line wingers. It's kind of down the middle on the blue line and between the pipes.
Yeah, and to play devil's advocate, I mean, what else is Daryl Sutter going to say? I hate the moves, right? Like, I understand what he's saying, and I understand Nazem Kadri technically is a winner. He wins a Stanley Cup, has an unbelievable breakout season. I think the jury is still out on that, but you're not a winner until you win, right? So technically he is a winner. I think to that point, you know, that was a major takeaway for me is perception, because Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar, last time I checked, in the postseason, really couldn't find a way to get the job done, right? And that's why I thought they had a systemic issue in Florida, and that's why they tried to go out and get Matthew Tkachuk, and they did, and they gave up the world to get Matthew Tkachuk, right? So sometimes it's all about fit. It's all about a change of scenery, and I'm very excited to see guys like Huberdeau and Weegar, who have been on some awesome teams the last couple of years in Florida, and it gets to the postseason, and granted, every team seems to be having this issue, but they run into Tampa, and they fold up like a cheap suit, right? So I'm curious in that aspect, how having Daryl Sutter is going to help these type of players. Jonathan Huberdeau, who every year seems to finish top 10 in the league in points, and Mackenzie Weegar, who's on the upswing, potentially close to a contract walk here and getting better and better as the years go on, how they can benefit their games having Daryl Sutter behind the bench. Taking nothing away from Andrew Brunette, the way he finished up last year specifically, and other guys in Florida. But I think it really helps to have a veteran like Daryl Sutter there who's been there before and could help get your strong points out too.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the Panthers probably agree. They did not retain Brunette after the season's end. One of the things that has been very much talked about with Jonathan Huberdeau has been a perceived lack of defense. And I think the analytics community sees it maybe heavier than the eye test would. A lot has been discussed about how Huberdeau over the past year has tried to really improve that aspect of his game, taking on the shorthanded aspects as well. And Eric Francis just kind of straight up asked Darryl about, does Jonathan Huberdeau have defensive deficiencies?
Guys who haven't won championships have to learn that. That's Eric, that's the same thing that was talked about here in Calgary for 5 years. All these guys that the team was built around, well, it's all you ever heard was, well, they don't play in their own end, or they don't play this style. Well, they learned how to play it. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you talk to Huberdeau about all those things, hey, the kid's on the, he's got his head and his heart in the right place, and he'll be fine. He's a big, big, strong guy, and he's got incredible hands, and you know what, he'll take care of. We had enough good players to surround him with, and he's going to make our guys better players. So I'm not worried about that defensive part at all with him.
So that's interesting. Not worried about it at all. Just needs a little bit of more practice, a little more time, a little more experience, a little more time in a Daryl Sutter system. You'll yeah. learn defense real quick.
He needs me. Pretty much what he's saying, right?
Yeah. The savior is cometh. Please enjoy.
Because I think every player tightens up under Daryl Sutter, right? Like, we've seen so many different players, whether he was in Los Angeles or whether he's in Calgary now. Like, there's just buy-in or there's not. And if you're not going to buy into what Daryl Sutter is selling, you're not going to be on the team, right? I think it's quite clear in sort of the body of work of his fantastic career behind the bench, being a GM, that he has a certain brand, a certain type of player. And I can tell you for sure, Daryl Sutter had a say in who they picked up. At least was in the conversation 1,000% his thoughts on if these guys would be a good fit. And I think it's quite clear that they were, because they're members of the Calgary Flames now. So I actually believe him when he says that. And it's always fun to hear coaches before training camp, their feet are back, or in this instance, they're working on the farm. But I can tell you the interview would be a lot different in like a month and a half from now, like after a three-game skid, eh?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And that was one thing I did feel like, you know, it was a strong 18 minutes with Daryl. He gave many good answers. It was a great interview. I, you know, felt very lucky, to be honest, because we had the Jacob Markstrom interview coming off of last weekend, which I don't know if you, I know we've discussed about 32 Thoughts before and how we usually rarely miss an episode. It rarely sits on kind of the catcher for more than an hour before we check it out, but Markstrom was very good. Enjoyed that chat and kind of some of the discussions. And I'd also forgotten that Jacob Markstrom and Jonathan Huberdeau were teammates in Florida. You forget that Marky was there for a little while before he went to Vancouver.
Bit of six degrees of separation there too, right?
Yeah.
I think we're at a point, you know, in this era too, where a lot of guys have played with each other. And if they haven't, they've skated with each other at some point in time, right? So there's a bit of camaraderie. And I think that helps too, like especially in Huberdeau's point of view, you're coming to a new team. You've just signed a massive extension, so you've just committed yourself a long period of time. You know, I'm sure he's had a lot of healthy conversations with management, the coaching staff. I think he's going to be ready to go, and I'm very curious to see what kind of Huberdeau we get. You know, is it the guy who's 100-point Huberdeau, but then isn't as strong defensively? And you're so right. Like, the analytics community hated him last year. I thought Jonathan Huberdeau for three quarters of the season should have been in the conversation for the Hart Trophy. Like, he was that good and that meaningful to the success of the Florida Panthers. Because I think the misconception out there, and I think if you look internally at the numbers the last couple of years, like, he didn't play as much as people thought with Alexander Barkov. Like, this guy can drive his own engine, his own line. And that's why I'm still curious to see if it's Elias Lindholm or is it Nazem Kadri who plays with the Jonathan Huberdeau. I mean, it seems to be a foregone conclusion out there that it's going to be Lindholm. I'm not sold on that, especially in the Daryl Sutter era. You know, even dating back to last year, they pick up Tyler Toffoli. Yeah, he's going to be on the first line. No, he's on the third line for the majority of the season. Mm-hmm. Now, things have opened up. We expect Toffoli to be the top line winger, and understandably so. But you never go on the beaten path and say, hey, this is what Daryl Sutter is going to do, because more times than not, he does the opposite, doesn't he?
Yeah, the only thing that I think there is that Lindholm showed last season that he's become such an excellent trigger man. And Huberdeau is typically known for someone that, you know, more of a setup guy. A little bit of finish to his game as well. So I've kind of drawn an immediate almost pairing to those two. Mm-hmm. And as much as, yes, Jonathan Huberdeau has taken a step forward in his 200-foot game, having a guy like Elias Lindholm there, like that's something that Jacob Markstrom talked about in his interview with Elliot and Jeff. He was saying, you know, Lindholm's one of those guys that, you know, Matthew and Johnny knew that they could cheat, knew they could leave the zone early because Lindholm's going corner to corner. He is battling everybody. He's winning those battles. He's blocking shots, and he's getting the puck out of the zone. And he's getting it to these guys who have already, you know, flown the coop and are off creating offense. So you know that you've got a little bit of a safety blanket defensively there, so I wonder if that's a match made in heaven type of thing. And then, like you said, like I've kind of drawn Tyler Toffoli in there just because I love the idea of Kadri, Mangiapane, and Coleman playing on a line together. I think that would just be a nightmare for opposing groups. And then you can do a whole host of things with the backline line, depending on kind of what personnel ends up winning those jobs at camp.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think I'd also add, like, don't get carried away with a guy's position, you know, especially in this era.
Sure.
Guys play the wing a lot. They play center. We've seen Lindholm on the wing before. What I'm telling you is I think expect the unexpected with Daryl Sutter, where I think Michael Backlund has proven to be a really, really strong number two center in this league. And now you're telling me he's going to be full-time a number three C. I understand on paper it looks great, but I don't read into it as much as others because I think there's going to be a lot of configurations. And I'm with you on the Lindholm front. That makes a lot of sense. You want to look at pairings. But I think we're at a point where there's enough new guys or two big new faces in the lineup that they're going to try a variety of different things. And I really do think it could only be looked at as a positive when you have 28, 91, and 11 up the middle, especially when you get to the Battle of Alberta and you have to go against, you know, McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, the list goes on, right? So I think it's only going to benefit Calgary in the long term. And to those points in the interview about centers and winning in the Stanley Cup playoffs, I could not agree more. I think you look at this team, yeah, it's different, but to have the depth it does now, I mean, it goes without saying what's going to happen, but I think it'll only be looked at as a positive here.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to have, you know, what was it, 440 goal scorers last year, three of them,
no.
And Mangiapane was 35-plus, so I don't know if we're going to see that. I don't know if we're going to see multiple 100-point players. But you could see a team that once again is way up there in goal differential, really does a good job of keeping the puck out of their own net, all those type of things. Because, I don't know, it doesn't really matter where you look. A lot of people who do any sort of prognostication on the NHL believe that the Flames have top three, top five, top third blue line for sure. Across the entire league with the addition of Uyghur and being able to retain everybody except for Eric and Branson. And, you know, I've been comparing Uyghur to Tanev a little bit just with the way that he can kind of defend the rush and skate well.
Yeah.
Daryl Sutter said he's very much like Rasmus Anderson and sees a lot more kind of comparisons between those two players. And like Daryl also said in the interview, if you could have two guys like that on your blue line rather than one, you certainly like the way that things are laying out for you. That's a thought on Daryl Sutter's interview yesterday. Joined Eric Francis. It was on the Francis Show for Horse Racing Alberta. Returns Mondays, but with Labor Day, they did that on a Tuesday. But you can find the podcast on the Big Show channel, whichever your favorite podcatcher is. Recommend you go and seek that one out. And also, if you haven't already, 32 Thoughts, and check out the Jacob Markstrom interview as well. Very good, as Markstrom also gets ready for camp. And congratulations to Markstrom, who over the weekend, with his better half, announced that they are having expecting a child. So love to see that as well. We'll take a break. Around the corner, it's the Morning Report. I got some bad news. I can't deliver on a promise I made yesterday, but nevertheless, we'll dive in with the Morning Report around the corner. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Let's get to the Morning Report. It's brought to you by Motorworks, exceeding all expectations, BMW repairs and service, and a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet and beat all competitors' quotes on 51st Ave and 3rd Street, Southeast.
Marty Rose.
Matt Rose.
Matt Rose.
Play ball.
And listen, I usually start it off, a lot of excitement, stuff to get to, but yesterday I said something and I have fibbed and I have lied because I said that we would lead with hockey almost every day moving forward, but then yesterday nothing happened. It was just one of those days where you got no trades,
no
signings,
no,
absolutely nothing.
No!
So we'll move on to the baseball. The Blue Jays and their series with the Baltimore Orioles.
It's agua under the bridge.
Whew, I don't know about that, Charlie. Listen, it was Mitch White for the Jays yesterday, Kyle Bradish for the O's. Things started solid for Toronto. We'll take you out to the top of the second. One out, Alejandro Kirk on second base after he doubled to start the inning.
Here's a swing and a looper into center field. That's down for a base hit. Kirk waved towards the plate. Here's the throw by Mullins on a bounce to the dish. Not in time! Out of the reach of Rutschman. A little bit of a collision on the slide to the dish by Kirk and Rutschman. And the slide by Kirk pinned Rutschman from reaching to his left and making a play on that baseball. The Blue Jays take a 1-0 lead on an RBI single from Matt Chapman.
So Chapman gets the Jays on the board with a nice little RBI there. Stretched it to a double for an early 1-0 lead. Toronto would look to add to their lead in the third inning. It was George Springer doubling to start it off. A couple of batters later, it was the red-hot Bo Bichette.
Here's a swing and a shot out to deep right field. Bo touches another one well. Back to the wall. Leaping Santander can't pull it back. That ball is down and in play.
Mm-mm. The call is overturned. It's a home run.
Yay.
Two-run home run for Bo Bichette.
Huzzah.
Have a series, Bo. Seven hits, four home runs for Bo Bichette here in Baltimore.
Nick, you know what Bo is?
Really good at hitting.
Smoking!
Two-run shot for Bo Bichette, fourth home run in two games for Bo, who's really found himself at the plate lately. 3-0 coming out of the third, but this is when White started to fall apart. Walks the first two batters, hits the third, loads the bases.
1-1. Breaking ball lined into left field, a base hit near the line. Odor scores. Behind him, Mateo to third base. Mullins on a two-run double from Adley Rutschman. 2-2. Santander grounds it into the shift on the right side. The Blue Jays need it out. Merrifield throws to first. Mullins comes in to score. We're tied 3-3. 0-1. Swinging a ground ball into left field, a base hit. Orioles have come all the way back with a four-run third. A go-ahead base hit from Ryan Mountcastle. 4-3 Baltimore.
Oof. Oof. Few rough outings for Mitch White in a row now. Didn't get much better. He would throw four more pitches, all of them balls, to walk the next runner. So then there was runners on first and second. John Schneider says, yeah, I've seen enough of this. Calls to the bullpen. Out comes Julian Merriweather. This guy's still around? Off the injured list for some relief, but three pitches later.
The pitch. Swinging a line drive into right field. That's down for a base hit. Rumbling towards third. Mountcastle waved towards the plate. Hernandez cuts that ball off in front of the warning track, throws it back towards second. It's an RBI base hit for Henderson. And the Orioles extend their lead 5-3.
That's not great. Merriweather would escape the inning without taking any further damage. The Orioles would go to their pen in the fourth after they allowed a couple of Jays to get on base, but a couple of Jays also left on base. Merriweather pitched a pretty clean fourth. He allowed one walk, but no damage. One and two-third innings for Merriweather in his return. Three strikeouts, a walk, and a hit against. In the fifth inning, Bo Bichette.
Smoking!
Doubling to start off the inning. A few batters later, Bichette still on second with a couple of outs. Matt Chapman at the dish.
Tying run at the plate. The pitch. Swinging a line drive into left field. That's down for a base hit. Bichette is coming home to score. Chapman's digging for second. He's got an RBI double. And it's a one-run game here in the fifth.
So down by just a run, Anthony Bass comes in replacing Merriweather, and pretty nice showing for Bass. He retired the side on five pitches, all flyouts. He'd add another out to start the bottom of the sixth on just two pitches, so four outs, all flyouts, only seven pitches. Very tidy for Bass. Replaced by Yusei Kikuchi, who would strike out Rougned Odor, but then allow a triple and then this.
Pitch to Mullins. Swinging a looper over the second baseman in for a base hit to right field. And to score Mateo.
This Kikuchi guy is still hanging around, hey?
Dude, I'd rather take six straight shots at tequila than watch Mitch White or Yusei Kikuchi pitch a baseball. Like, it's mind-numbing at this point. And they continue to trot these guys out there. So clearly they're starting the first game of the postseason if they make it there.
I'm going to assume you don't get along well with tequila.
No, I hate it.
Oh, okay. Good, yeah. Cedric Mullins with the RBI single in the bottom of the sixth, restored a two-run lead. We go to the seventh. Things got a bit heated. Former Blue Jay Brian Baker, claimed off waivers by Baltimore, took to the mound in relief action. He had also given up a run the day before. It's important to point that out right now. Runners on the corner after Bichette opened the inning with a single, then Kirk did the same.
Here's the 3-2. Ground ball right up the middle, double play ball. Mateo feeds Odor for one, throw to first in time. Two down. Bichette comes in to score. Blue Jays make it a one-run game.
So Hernandez bats into a double play, but does score a run on it. Next batter up, Matt Chapman. He would go down swinging to end the inning, and then Baker letting the Jays bullpen or Jays dugout know.
A high fastball at 99 miles an hour. Chapman couldn't get to it. A strikeout for Baker, who minimizes the damage. Runners were on the whoa, and now we got some John going back and forth. Baker snapped back at the Blue Jays, and the bench is clear. Coach is separating the players out in front of the mound. Boy, did that ever escalate quickly. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. being restrained over towards the third baseline. Gray meets White in the middle of the diamond. And Guerrero and Hernandez are incensed. They are hot.
Yeah, not great. Hernandez and Guerrero, the most infuriated. Schneider, the manager, John, would get tossed in the eighth inning after arguing balls and strikes, although it sounds like it was kind of a culmination of things. He was asked about it after the game. He was also asked about Orioles reliever Brian Baker, all after the tilt was over.
I didn't understand the warnings. I didn't understand why Brian Baker was looking into our dugout after giving up a run on back-to-back days. I thought a couple pitches were close that Jeff didn't agree with. I asked, was that down? And he threw me out. So I wasn't quite sure what prompted that, but I guess combination of all those three.
What did you see?
That's just, I believe that the term there is welcome to the ump show, John. That's what we call that.
Jeff Nelson had himself a night again, eh?
Oh,
the guy
boy.
Just loves doing his job.
I don't know if I haven't seen the report card. Like, I know that there's that Twitter account that does the MLB ump report cards. I doubt Jeff passed, but I might have to go back and repeat the grade. We'll have to find out. Jays were still down by a run going into the bottom of the eighth. Trevor Richards on in relief. Not great, though. Two outs, bases loaded.
3-1. Thrown to the backstop for ball four. A run comes in. That all-important run. Rutschman, McKenna, there's a swing and a line drive into left field. That's down for a base hit. One run is in. Here comes the throw to the plate. On a bounce, Kirk with the tag. Mountcastle is out, and the side is retired.
Overturned. There was a blocking violation of the plate. The runner will score. Baltimore will retain its challenge.
Mountcastle gets an RBI single, takes second on the throw.
So Richards walks in a run. They don't get a call on the nice throw, blocking foul called. So the third does end up scoring and not ending the inning. Made it 9-5. Jays fall 9-6. Kirk driving in who else but Bo Bichette in the ninth before Teoscar Hernandez would strike out swinging to end the game. A tough loss for Toronto after a couple nice wins on Labor Day. The Orioles pulling just a little bit closer in that AL wildcard race with their 9-6 win over the Jays. Still 3.5 games back. But not going away. It will be the series concluding tonight just after 5. Alec Manoa for Toronto. We'll have it on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Nick?
I feel like I was watching Shrek. There's so many layers to this game. We have Ben Wagner coming up in about 45 minutes. Rest assured, I have a lot to say on this entire situation from who in the hell Brian Baker is. I had to Google this guy. To Jeff Nelson's body of work. To Whit Merrifield. To Mitch White, to Yusei Kikuchi, Bo Bichette, Fuego, Smokin', play the clip. There's a lot of layers to this game, to the home plate blocking rule. I don't want to be a hypocrite, but the Jays won this out a couple weeks back against the Twins. They don't win this argument. There's a problem with that one. And then we're going to get to Rougned Odor. There's a lot to cover, but carry on, good sir.
Yeah, listen, I don't have a whole lot more from this game today because I don't have the audio from Rougned Odor. But yeah, he was running his mouth after the game.
I don't know if that clip's real, man. Like, I saw that on Twitter,
I spent time looking for the Vladdy clip where Vladdy says he was acting like a superhero, and I couldn't find that one either. So it feels like some of them were just like, you know, a couple maybe newspaper scribes so that the audio or video never got actually put to the internet. But I don't know. Yeah. Did you have the perhaps quote from Odor?
No, it's a parody. Like, I looked in like longer this morning before coming on air. I think it's a parody quote because I was going to say, like, that was the, you know, there's a lot of comedy, you know, in my life. The flip-flop guy is among them at the gym. But, like, this was hilarious. You're telling me Rougned Odor, vaunted rival of the Blue Jays, is playing peacemaker in that, I don't even want to call it a brawl, that gathering at the mound where nobody was going to do anything. Like, Jorge Mateo was holding back Teoscar and Vladdy. Nobody was doing anything. And Rougned Odor, who one-punched Jose Bautista all those years ago, was playing peacemaker. I've literally seen it all at this point. Like, that made me laugh. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. I'll just leave it at that. To the top of the AL wildcard playoff race, the Tampa Bay Rays continuing their series, taking on the Red Sox down in St. Pete. Nick, I think the days of getting any help whatsoever from the Boston Red Sox is done. This team is dreadful. We'll pick this one up in the sixth. Already 5-2 for Tampa Bay.
I think that early in the season.
Oh, what a shot off the bat of Bethancourt. And that baby got out of here in a hurry. Home run on the 1-1 pitch. Bethancourt hits a hot shot liner to left. And there's a shot. Off the bat of Chang. That baby's going to go. Home run, Yu Chang. Back to back. Bethancourt and Chang.
So that made it 7-2. The Rays hold on to win 8-4.
Oh, ho, ho. What a sh.
They lead the Jays by 1.5 games in the standings. They'll look for the sweep this afternoon. 4:40 first pitch. Jeffrey Springs up against the Canadian Nick Pivetta for the Bo Sox. You might have watched this one following the Jays and Orioles because it was on Sportsnet. Mariners playing Game 2 against the White Sox. A pitching duel, the story of this one. Logan Gilbert and Johnny Cueto, the starters, and both having really tremendous years. The Mariners led this one 1-0 late, eighth inning. We take you to the plate.
On its way, punished deep. Cal Raleigh take right field. It's all he does. His 23rd. It's a 3-run lead in the bottom of the eighth.
Yes, sir. Cal Raleigh with the home run that made it 3-0 because you know what?
It's all he does.
The White Sox couldn't get anything cooking in their first half of the ninth. Mariners win again. They're 9-1 in their last 10. Back in first place tie for the top AL wild card. So here's a look at the standings. It is Tampa and Seattle in those 1 and 2 wild card spots. Toronto a game and a half back in the third. And then the Baltimore Orioles 3.5 games back of a playoff spot. The Stampeders will return to the practice field later today for a brief walkthrough. They'll play against the Elks Saturday, looking for back-to-back wins. In other CFL news, the Riders released maligned defensive tackle Garrett Marino. He was the one who took out Jeremiah Masoli earlier in the season. He had been suspended for racist language on the field at the same time. Bad late hit against Zach Caleros this past weekend as the Bombers were able to beat the Riders. So in the end, pack your... bro, beat it. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. At the U.S. Open, 5-seed Norwegian Casper Ruud advanced to the semifinals. Straight sets win over 13th-ranked Italian Matteo Berrettini. First time a Norwegian has been in the semis at the U.S. Open. The Russian Kochanov also advanced, the 27th seed, beating Aussie Nick Kyrgios in a 5-set marathon. Today, American Francis Tiafoe can book his ticket to the final in one of the two quarterfinal matches for the men. On the women's side, American Coco Gauff eliminated in straight sets. One American remaining. It's the 8th seed, Jessica Pegula, who will battle against the 1 seed, Iga Świątek, later today. And the President's Cup coming up in just a few weeks.
No, you're not supposed to hit it into the water.
But you hit it into the water.
I know I hit it into the water.
Well, why do they even have water if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
The top American golfers will compete against the top international golfers, and on Tuesday, we found out two Canadians going to be on the international side, Corey Connors and Taylor Pendrith, who is a captain's pick, which is pretty cool to see, with the two being just the best of friends and now President's Cup teammates. Looking forward to that. Listen, the international team, they are big-time underdogs, but love cheering for our Canadians. And finally, I don't know if you saw this, Nick, or if this interests you at all, but Jake Paul's going to fight Anderson Silva. Most of Paul's other fights have looked embarrassingly staged, and I've had a hard time really taking any of it seriously. Any intrigue here, Nick?
Look, I'll probably stream it illegally, but I can't say I'm committing financially to this fight because, yeah, you nailed it. But again, I do respect the Paul brothers. I know they're very hated. One's in professional wrestling. It's this one. And also, or no, is it Logan? It's Logan Paul. Never mind. I always get them confused. Logan Paul's in professional wrestling and WWE does some stuff. I respect the hustle. Like, they make a lot of money and they found a way to be entrepreneurs, so I respect that part of it. But yeah, I don't have much interest in this. How about you?
No, I don't have interest. You're gonna get an illegal stream, hey? Come on, Nick. You wouldn't steal a dog, would you?
No, definitely not. I'm kidding. I'm gonna order it. Yes. We all do that, right?
Yeah. Here, I got the perfect clip right here. That's it. That'll...
And good night, and good luck to you, sir.
That'll do it for the Morning Report, brought to you by Motorworks, exceeding all expectations. BMW repairs and service in a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet and beat all competitors' quotes, 51st Ave and 3rd Street, Southeast. So yeah, hopefully we get some NHL news tomorrow so I can kind of start the top of it like that. But until then, it's the way it's going to go, brother. A little bit of James.
Brett Conley signed with HC Lugano. There's your,
I will reiterate, that is not going to lead the Morning Report, unfortunately. We'll take a break.
Sadly.
Around the corner. It's the start of the workout for the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Three straight guests, and the next one, Dave Dickinson. Just after a quick break to start hour two of the big show in the morning. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.